Welcome to Catalytic Leadership, the podcast designed to help leaders intentionally grow and thrive. Here is your host, author, and leadership and executive coach, Dr. William Attaway.
Hey, it's William, and welcome to today's episode of the Catalytic Leadership Podcast. Each week, we tackle a topic related to the field of leadership. My goal is to ensure that you have actionable steps you can take from each episode to grow in your own leadership. Growth doesn't just happen. My goal is to help you become intentional about it. Each week, we spotlight leaders from a variety of fields, organizations, and locations. And my goal is for you to see that leaders can be catalytic no matter where they are or what they lead. I draw inspiration from the stories and journeys of these leaders, and I hear from many of you that you do too. Let's jump into today's interview. I'm so excited today to have Ann Dranitzaris and Heather Dranitzaris-Hilliard on the show. Ann and Heather wear many hats: consultants, executive coaches, trainers, speakers, and authors. A mother-daughter team, they are organizational and leadership development experts at Caliber Leadership Systems, a boutique consulting firm specializing in dismantling dysfunction in organizations. They are dedicated to empowering individuals, leaders, and organizations to achieve their potential by leveraging their expertise in the neurobiology of human development, combined with a systems thinking approach. As experts in human development and behavioral change, leadership, organizational transformation, interpersonal dynamics, and the achievement of potential, Ann and Heather have worked with thousands of leaders and individuals from around the world. They've been featured in dozens of publications, spoken at professional conferences, and written several series of books on personality type and the brain based on the Striving Styles and Myers-Briggs Type Indicator. I'm so excited to have you two on the show today. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you. Wonderful to be here.
I would love for you to start by sharing some of your story with our listeners, particularly around your journey and your development as leaders. How did you get started?
The place that we always start with our story, because it is a little bit different, is that Ann and I, as a mother-daughter team, we actually didn't meet until I was 27.
Oh, my
goodness. And so Ann had me when she was a teenager and put me up for adoption. And so I grew up in a family that was, you know, very different from me from a personality perspective. Ann and I reunited when I was 27. And 3 years later, we went into business together, starting up Caliber, what's now Caliber Leadership Systems. And so a lot of my journey, like I'll talk about my journey as a leader was sort of built on that foundation of having these experiences growing up and sort of observing my family and my family dynamic and the people around me. I was always sort of bent a little bit as an entrepreneur. And so I had this orientation towards starting things and initiating things and figuring out ways to make money from the time I was very young. Never really thought of myself as an entrepreneur or a leader, but always gravitated towards those sorts of things. And I went to business school and then went into consulting, for I was working for a human resources consulting firm where I was a partner when I met Ann. And so my work in organizations was all around reward systems and performance management systems and trying to provide systems to leaders to help them get what they needed from their people. So I had this sort of firsthand exposure to a ton of leaders very early on in my work career. And I started to see how we weren't making traction with these leaders. And then Ann comes in, and her background, I'll let her talk to that, very different because it was more about shaping behavior. And when we started to put those two things together, that really transformed my trajectory as a leader for sure.
Wow.
Yes. And from my perspective, as Heather alluded to, I just came up in a very different way. My approach way back in the 70s, when, you know, we were changing our ideas around mental health and holistic health, and I wanted to help people in a holistic way. And given the bossiness of my personality, I had to do it my own way. You know, so just going with nature along that course. And so I started out in private practice. And very, very quickly in private practice, I recognized that a lot of people were coming to me complaining about their bosses and feeling really powerless to do anything about their boss's behavior. And it was at that time in our evolution where people started leaving their organizations. They weren't sticking around. Employees weren't lifers anymore. And as a result of this, leaders had to take stock of, you know, their own behavior in terms of keeping their employees and what they had to do differently. They just couldn't boss people around anymore. Yeah. And so I started a leadership coaching practice and started making some inroads there. And I was doing that when Heather and I had our reunion.
Wow.
And so we came at it more from that, you know, people and people and behavior from my side and Heather's, you know, systems and behavior from her side. And I as well at that time was working with the Myers-Briggs type indicator. And I had done some writing on personality profiles for leaders to use in my coaching practice. And those became some of the elements of our beginning consulting enterprise.
I love that.
Yes.
You know, given your very different styles and backgrounds, I'm curious, how would you define leadership?
It's a good question. And interestingly, I would say I would define it differently today than I probably would have defined it 20 years ago or 25 years ago when we were first starting out, because of our own sort of learning and growth and orientation. And, if, you know, from my perspective, you know, leadership is a series of activities that individuals use in order to get people to follow them in order to produce a particular result. And that is everything from directing them and, you know, teaching them, governing them, holding them accountable, exercising appropriate authority, right, in a way that has people actually moving in the direction that the organization needs them to be going in. When I first started leading, I was in my 20s. I had no idea. And so I was doing it off of, like most leaders, I was doing it off of my personality, right? Yeah. And I'm a, you know, outgoing and a, you know, motivating and being optimistic and, you know, but not necessarily because of my personality style. I didn't do a very good job on the directing.
Yeah.
You know, telling them what to do, when to do it, how to do it, all of those pieces that's really, really fundamental, the defining it out. And so I was much more process oriented. And so I've learned so much over the, you know, in the work that we've done, because in order for us to lead our clients, we have to be able to, you know, demonstrate it. And so Anne and I, we talk about this a lot, our Petri dish in our own business and in our personal lives. We test everything out and then we bring it out to our clients, right? So I think there's a lot that we have to sort of evolve, because I do think there's a lot of misperceptions and ideas. And Anne and I talk about it a lot. And I'll say this is the last thing, this idea that, you know, to be a good leader means X, right? Mm-hmm. And in looking at instead about how to be an effective leader is a big part of what we talk to our clients about and what we practice ourselves.
That's good. And what about you? How would you define leadership?
Well, I don't think I would define it any differently, because, you know, Heather and I have walked this path together and evolving, you know, how we look at leadership as more as a process and as a developmental process in particular. But the only thing I might add to that is that we approach leadership from looking at who the individual leader is. And Heather and I have both alluded to our own styles, which are very different, because, you know, I had a lot of lessons to learn relative to I would just be directive because that's my style. And, you know, in not understanding why people were reacting when I would just give instruction, right? You know, and then I went through a whole process of, I'm trying to be nice and, you know, I'm trying to be inclusive and all of these things that we as leaders, we start trying to do something instead of saying, you know, what is effective leadership and what do employees need as they're developing. And so we start out with leadership from the inside out. Just to reference a book from years ago, I think Urs Bender wrote the book on leadership from the inside out, is recognizing the human being that is leading, what their brain organization is, what their personality type is, and where they are in their development, how they defend against learning, because they're protecting their image of themselves as a good leader, as Heather referred to. And we try really hard to, in our work, break leaders free from that notion that there is any sort of one type of leadership behavior fits all, because different employees as well, they need different things in their developmental process. And so we might think that being directive is great for this type of personality, where being influential is so much better for this other type of personality. And so without a whole range of tools, we're really stuck.
That's so good. You know, I talk a lot about how a leader needs to discover their own wiring as a leader, you know, how they are designed and wired. And, you know, when we begin in leadership, like you say, so many of us operate out of our personality. We operate out of who we are, and we expect everybody else to want to be led like we do. And that's cute. It's just not true.
Yes.
But by learning how we are wired and like who we are, that can help us to lead other people. And then we can begin to understand their wiring better and lead in a way that influences them to bring out the maximum of their capacity and help elevate them to achieve their goals, their growth. When I first took the Myers-Briggs, you know, I popped out as an ISTJ, right? And both of you know quite well, like that has some strengths and many weaknesses as a leader. And there are things that I had to learn as part of my process.
Yes.
But my coach helped walk me through that. And that's the beauty of having somebody that will help guide you and help you avoid the ditches, so that you don't have to go into every ditch yourself. I love that that's how you coach and how you lead, that you help people to discover that and you help guide them in a way that's going to maximize their leadership capacity and skill.
Yeah,
we talk a lot with our clients about the fact that we grow in relation to others, right? And so this isn't a journey we're meant to do as human beings on our own. This is a journey we're meant to do with others. And so we have to find those others who can move us into that next step and into that next place. And that's why, you know, Anne and I we talk about, you know, us being a little bit different from the typical coach consultant, because we see our role as leading the leaders that we're working with, right? So it's our job to, you know, move them along their journey, but we have to lead them. And that's, you know, it's not about the questions we ask. We have to sometimes give them direction. We have to sometimes give them feedback. We have to hold them accountable sometimes. So there's, you know, all of those activities that we talk about in the process of leading are ones that we have to practice with our clients. But I know for me personally, when we talk about, you know, that place of starting from our own wiring, my, you know, sort of greatest moments of growth come from, you know, really going into that place of reflecting on myself and my, how my brain is wired. What does that mean for me as a leader? Not just how do I prefer to lead, but what are those inherent gaps? And what do we need to do developmentally? And I'll often tell the story about, for me, for those of you in your audience that might know Myers-Briggs, I'm an ENTP, but the relational part of my brain was not well developed because of my conditioning. So we talk about nature and nurture. Yeah. And so I would rather get up in front of 1,000 people when, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, 1,000 people, than I would share personal details about my life, my journey, my story. And so what we've done in the work that we've done with our clients was sort of taking it past just understanding how we behave, but really giving that roadmap to, okay, what do I need to do to develop? And so once I understood, and as Anne built out the Striving Styles, we could see that, oh, I need to develop my wiring in my brain to my relational function. So that part of my brain where those activities for connecting and relating and communicating all reside, I could then do activities, simple activities that allowed myself to build that pathway. And so now I can talk about myself without my voice changing and getting all uncomfortable and thinking, oh my goodness, I need to go run away and hide, right? And that's what I love about, you know, sort of leadership and the work that we do is really seeing the development and the growth of the humans that we work with, because, you know, that for us is, you know, moving them that one step closer to their potential. So Anne and I have always come at it from that way of what's the system, what's the process, you know, how do we really guide them in a way that we can see those tangible results? And I think that's, you know, a lot of our fun too in the work that we do with our clients.
You speak and you write about dysfunction, leadership dysfunction, organizational dysfunction. What are some common leadership dysfunctions that you see?
Oh, let's get started. just to lay the groundwork for this, we try and normalize the word dysfunction. It's, you know, dysfunction is as common as functional. Mm-hmm. And this is where Heather and my, you know, founding principles of, you know, people, systems, results, is that there is a system that if we work the system and everything works in alignment with this system, including the behaviors of employees and leaders, then we will achieve our desired results. But it's when we move out of that, you know, system through our behavior, and leaders move out of the system through their behavior, or because the leadership behavior isn't defined, that we create dysfunction. And a lot of the leadership dysfunctions are simply created when the agenda of the leader to that particular person is more important than the agenda of the collective. And so that, you know, there's the dysfunction of silos that leaders create. There's a dysfunction of neglect. There are narcissistic dysfunctions. There's the big one in nowadays is the dysfunction of permissiveness, where leaders don't take authority for their role and they don't define and direct and manage performance because they're too afraid of their employees' reactions.
Wow.
Yes, we've been working with this one pretty exclusively for almost a decade now, and writing about it as well, because it's that swing, you know, rather than developing, there's that swing from authoritarian, I tell people what to do and they do it, to the other side of I'm Joe Nice Guy or Jane Nice Gal, and I'm just going to let my employees run the show. And they'll love me and think I'm a great leader because I'm so nice, you see, and then the organization suffers because there's, you know, there's that idea or belief that employees should know, because I knew they should know, to your point earlier about, you know, leaders lead the way they like to be led. But this has created a lot of lack of productivity, you know, leaders being marginalized, devalued, et cetera, in their organizations as a result of this. And Heather, if you can add to that.
Yeah, I was just going to, I'm just thinking as Anne was talking, we have a client that we've been working with for a while now, and they were part of the tipping point for us to write our book, So You Think You Can Lead, which is really about this move towards permissiveness and how do we get back to, you know, actually leading with authority and appropriate authority, right? Because people are so afraid of their own authority. And what's, you know, we do look at things from that, you know, there's a lot of fear in leaders in organizations, and where there's a lot of dysfunction, there tends to be a lot of fear because the leaders haven't developed up and built out those toolkits to be more effective. But we've been talking about accountability in this organization for a long time, not an uncommon topic. But a lot of people, when they think accountability, they think of that end step, that very last thing of giving a consequence. And so having an to really help them understand that as leaders, the accountability is, there's a bigger framework than that. It's how you define things up front. It's how you direct things along the way. It's how you correct, you know, and how you give consequences for sure from that confronting where there's gaps. But people get so afraid when we say accountability and it's like, well, we can't just, you know, confront them or yell at them or fire them because they don't do something. And it's like, you've forgotten all the rest of this activity that goes into accountability as a leader. And you're focusing on that thing that you're so afraid of. And it's such a tiny part of being effective around holding people and having a culture of accountability. And this is where we've gotten into is, and you know, you look at the research, right? Is most leaders have been leading for 10, 15 plus years before they have any training. So they've developed all these coping habits, these bad habits, and you know, what we talk about as self-protective habits because they don't have the skills to lead effectively. And so that's always, you know, the place that we say to start is self-awareness, as we talked about, what's your wiring, but really looking at your own development, not thinking just because I've been anointed as a leader that I suddenly magically have all of these skills and tools and capabilities so that I can, you know, and that's what I know that's how I started leading. My organization promoted me, found myself leading 5 people and having no idea what I was doing. But hey. That's how we punish the people we put into leadership roles. I'm not going to make you a leader. I'm not going to teach you how to do a damn thing, and you got to figure it out as you go.
You know, that is so true to the experiences I've had myself, as well as with so many of my clients. You know, I work a lot with entrepreneurs, and they are very good at providing a product or a service. They bring it to market. Everything is going well, and then it begins to grow and find success. And then they have to scale, and they have to hire other people to help them with fulfillment. And then all of a sudden, they're looking around the room, and everybody's looking to them to lead. And they're like, wait a minute, I didn't sign up to lead. I know how to do this service or this product. I don't know about this leading thing. And they find themselves thrust into the deep end of the water.
Yes. So it's one of our sweet spots in our practice, as well as working with entrepreneurs. And we developed an approach to entrepreneurs that really defines the stages of entrepreneurial growth, mm-hmm. and the crisis point that an entrepreneur goes through at each stage of the development. And that mm-hmm. question of, should I go or should I leave? Because hey, I really didn't sign up to lead. Mm-hmm. I signed up to have fun creating this idea and being successful and taking it to market. Yeah. I did not sign up for getting in the weeds with people and helping them develop. and so there is that every stage of growth of the organization where the entrepreneur actually has to step back and say, this isn't about me anymore. This is about what the business needs and what people needs. Mm-hmm. And can I put those needs ahead of my own?
Mm. Mm. And that is what great leadership looks like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. How do you cure a workplace that is dysfunctional, so much so that it gets toxic? How do you fix that?
Magic wand.
Magic wand. You keep it in your drawer, right? Drawer of your desk, right? Everybody who's listening is going to want to put in an order for a second magic wand. And so expect those orders to be coming in now.
Yes.
We one of the phrases we use with our clients all the time is we can't just flick a switch here.
Yeah.
And there's no magic bullet answer, so stop looking for it. Because we hear that a lot when there's dysfunction, even in toxic environments. It's like, well, we just need this one thing, or we just need this one person, or we just need to get rid of that person. And it's like, no, we're in an ecosystem here. Yeah. And that toxicity was allowed to grow, to start and to grow because of stuff that was going on at the leadership level, or an absence of systems, or that they're stuck in a crisis point in terms of their growth. Like, we have a lot of organizations, very successful in the marketplace organizations, who get stuck in adolescence, right? Where the leaders aren't trying to mature the systems. They're not developing themselves as the leaders. They're not developing the tiers below them. And we see a lot of that dysfunction emerge in those environments. again, more interested in their needs and how they feel and, than what they need to do to develop in order to grow or to make their, stabilize and make their organizations functional. And so there is, you have to be, we always talk about, they'll complain about the symptoms. We go in and we look for those root causes. And then we have to sort of sequence, how do we move the organization through it? And mm-hmm. so, because there's steps, right? And it's, are we dealing with leadership behaviors? Do we start with systems first and processes and look at the gaps in process that are leading to the dysfunctional behavior as opposed to blaming the individual? Because often that's mm-hmm. what they want to do. They finger point and it's like, yeah. And so how do we move that along? And sometimes when it's the CEO that's causing the dysfunction, then maybe they're narcissistic, we then think about, okay, if we're not going to be able to change their behavior, how do we work with the tier below so that they can stop reacting and become more effective and be able to lead despite what might be happening at the CEO level? So in each organization, it is a little bit different. But it is sort of, there's always a path, and it's a developmental path that looks at, the systems and processes that the organization has, structural elements of it. But then also, what do we need to be doing behaviorally? Because, as Anne and I found out early in our careers and how we came together was, with her work with clients and doing coaching with individual leaders in organizations, they still were working within that ecosystem and they couldn't affect change. I was doing the systems work with my clients. We were putting in these great systems, but the leaders weren't able to really leverage them to get the behavioral change that was needed. And so that's why we've always said it has to be both. We have to have a strategy that looks at what are we doing developmentally and behaviorally with the people, and what are we doing from a systems structure process perspective. And when those two start coming together and working, that's when we really move it out of that dysfunction. Now, that being said, if there's someone really toxic, of course they need to go.
Yes, truly.
Well said. Well said. You talk about Peter Pan syndrome. And this is a term that I was not familiar with. I would love to hear you describe a little bit about what happens to an entrepreneur's company when that entrepreneur is suffering from Peter Pan syndrome.
Well, we touched on it relative to the stages of development, you see, where the entrepreneur actually doesn't want to stop flitting around doing the fun things. Yeah. And of course, the fun things for the entrepreneur is, that new shiny thing that captures the imagination and not having to deal with the tough stuff. Not having to deal with their own development. And it is a part of the adolescent stage. Mm-hmm. And, there's absolutely nothing wrong with an entrepreneur that really owns, these are my core strengths, talents, and abilities. And I actually don't want to lead people. You see, it's better for the business when they say that, rather than creating the kind of chaos, that kind of chaos where their adult employees have to run around cleaning up their messes for them all of the time because they don't want to grow up and stick around. And there are certain brain styles that are, as entrepreneurs, they're more prone to this syndrome because they don't look in. They only look out at, what do I want to do that, I can get excited about and excite other people about and be successful at. And because those are the things that make me feel the way I want to feel. Yeah. And so it's very eye-centered. And of course, that's what adolescence is all about. It's like, I know better. I'm a great leader. Leave me alone. Don't bother me with any issues or problems that you're having, because that simply means that you have a negative mindset and go fix it. It's not my problem, And so they're actually not ready or able psychologically to actually want to move into that stage three of taking on more responsibility, settling, taking on more rooted behavior, relying on the systems, delegating more authority, and not making the messes that they tend to make during while they're really caught up in the Peter Pan syndrome.
That's so good. The other thing I'd just like to add a couple of things to that is we see with those clients of ours that are, you know, entrepreneurs stuck in it, a lot of the drive is they want to be liked. They want to be liked by their people. They want to be seen as, you know, the fun leader, and so they'll party with the staff. They'll put a lot of energy and money into how we feed them and what's in the environment and, you know, being really permissive and tolerant. And when we start talking to them about, well, you need some rules around here, right? Yeah. Whoa, I don't like rules, right? And so as we talked about earlier, because they don't like to be led the way they need to lead their organization, they really resist it. And that anything to do with hierarchy, like we hear it all the time from entrepreneurs, I want my organization to be flat. We say it doesn't work. Doesn't work. If, you know, for most organizations, for most people working in organizations, you got to have at least some hierarchy in order to make this work, right? And so it is that active resistance to doing those things that feel more grown up, that feel more, you know, weighty. Because again, and I can relate to this as my personality is one that often gets caught in Peter Pan, is that it's like you want to do the stuff that makes you feel really good, as Anne said, right? And this is fun and this is interesting and I love doing this and that. And it's like, that stuff, I don't want any part of that. But fortunately for me, I have Anne who, you know, is like, no, that's not going to work. So we very quickly went into we need a business manager. Business manager manages the, and there's decisions you can make that allow it to happen for your organization without you having to be the one who does it. And that's really important too, in order to move out of it. And those that are struggling with Peter Pan is like, they stay at the center of everything and they become the bottleneck in their business. And they, you know, and again, and in a way it makes them feel needed and important and the hero, which again, you know, feeds the ego needs, but it doesn't actually serve the business. And that's their development. They have to move through that developmentally in order to get their organization out of the dysfunction of chaos or Peter Pan syndrome.
That's so good. You know, I've seen that so often with entrepreneurs, and exactly what you're describing, they get stuck there. They're too busy trying to be the buddy and they don't understand the need for structure and systems. On the disc profile, I'm a high C. I'm a systems person. That is how I'm wired in every part of my life. Like everything is a system in my head. Yeah. But working with entrepreneurs, it's been so fascinating to me to watch people who do not think that way. And in fact, actively rebel against that.
Right.
Like we don't want it. We don't need it. Ooh, hang on.
we have a client that has they've got about 500 employees, and every time we start talking about system and process, they refer to it as government. And I'm always like, okay, there's like, you know, over the top bureaucracy, and then there's just systems and processes that support the organization, right? And so it's that resistance doesn't necessarily go away, even though the organization and they've worked, you know, been around for a long time. They're older, more mature as leaders. You know, they've aged as leaders. but it's like that wiring in them because of their personality, and they haven't done the development that they needed to do, and so they're still, you know, sort of a ton of resistance that their organization has to work through in order to get to that place, right?
So where do you start? Let's think about this from two different perspectives. If you are working for a leader who is like that, like you're describing, how do you lead up in such a way that you help them and help the organization in a healthy way?
So just coming at this from that perspective of, you know, working with what can be worked with initially.
Yeah.
If we were to say to an entrepreneur who's, you know, really stuck in seeing the problem outside of themselves, you see, they're coming with symptoms of, I can't get our employees to take more initiative, or I can't get, you know, employees to do X, Y, and Z. Is that the approach that is taken is what the leader can tolerate. And meaning that, you know, with entrepreneurs, especially with the, you know, the performer or the visionary style, you have to start big and help them build tolerance. Because, you know, again, if you're looking at how the brain is organized, you know, certain styles, and we'll use yours as an example, where the ISTJ, with their need to be secure, needs systems in order to perform optimally. An ENTP needs expansiveness and a focus on the future to perform optimally. And so if you give them that, okay, well, now you have to rein it in, buddy. You have to pull it in. You have to adhere to these systems. You have to walk the talk. And it's like, goodbye, I'm firing you. You know? And so, we give it a span of time to help them get their mind around what they are contributing to the issues. And we never look at who's to blame. It's like, okay, employees are contributing this. A lack of systems contributes here. But the leader, your leadership is contributing. And you have to make some decisions about, do you want to develop or do you want to hire in and stay with your own unique abilities and being that driving force? And a lot of entrepreneurs don't want to give up. What Heather was referring to is that, you know, I want to be able to come, you know, and talk to the guys on the floor and party with them. But when you get that hierarchy, you have to go through and respect the chain of command. And they don't like being limited, you see. So again, it's about building tolerance and seeing it as a developmental process, both for the organization and for the leaders.
One of the things that we talk to our clients about is that in order to get them into the growth mindset, which is where we need them to be to kind of get used to this change that's going about, is that, you know, we go from status quo to fear. And so the second we start talking about this is what you need to do, the fear comes up. And that fear tends to shut stuff down. And I always like to say to clients, it's like you got to get past the first three no's. Right? Because the first no is, no, I haven't even thought about this and I'm not ready to entertain it. The second no is, there's still a discomfort. The third no is I'm going to go down kicking and screaming, and then we can get to yes. But with each one of those no's we get, we go away, we regroup, we learn something from why they're saying no and what's the fear and how do we address that kernel of fear that's in there so that we can get them past the no's to the yes. So we have to look at some of this work that we do. And if, you know, if your audience are leaders in organizations where they're trying to influence, is think about it as a process. Like, it's not a single, I made a recommendation and they shut it down. It's like, okay, well, what did you learn from them shutting it down? And what was the fear that they were identifying, right? And they will always identify it. You know, some of them more openly, like, you know, that's going to make us look ridiculous, because I've heard that from clients, because it's new to them, right? But we have to get them out of the fear to where they're learning. And oftentimes, you know, teaching people and getting them to see and understand, you know, different ways in which things can be made to work, it doesn't happen overnight, and it doesn't happen in one conversation. We plant the seed, we grow it, you know, we nurture it along till we can get them to where they need to be. And that's, again, our job is to help lead them. But if you're internally trying to do this, you have to think about it that same way, right? Is how do you lead them to where you know they need to get to, and not take it personally or get frustrated or shut down because you get no number one and then maybe no number two. It's like, go after three no's and then we move to yes. As long as with each one of those no's you're learning, you're taking that in and using it to come back with a different approach to influencing them to get them to the yes.
I love that. That is a fantastic model. Yep. Three no's. I wrote that one down, and I hope our listeners did as well. That's really good. You know, both of you are continual learners. I can see that just in the time we've spent together, and you're constantly learning and growing beyond where you have been. Is there a book that has made a difference in your journey that you would recommend as a, hey, you know, if people who are listening want to put a book on their to read list, this is one I would suggest.
Well, I referenced it earlier. It's the that was another book of his, Leadership from the Inside Out, which really helps particularly new leaders understand that there's no external model that they have to try and become, that they, you know, really developing as a leader. means that they have to know themselves. And, you know, there's so much being written about this, and it's still not being considered that first step of self-awareness and what it actually means to be self-aware in terms of identifying not just our strengths and weaknesses, but how we feel, you know, and what we're afraid of, and what we need to do to move out of that fear zone, and so we can actually start learning and growing and stop resisting. And leadership from the inside out as a concept really positions people who are in leadership roles to start thinking about themselves and the impact that they're having, or the lack of impact that they're having on their people, especially as it pertains to why aren't people following me? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talk a lot about the development of followership as a core competency that leaders have to be able to develop. Because if you don't know how to teach people how to follow, you can't just expect them to know. Which is a real blind spot for many permissive leaders.
So good. Mm-hmm. You have a new book, and I'd love for you just to share a little bit about that. Tell me about the book that that you have written. I mean, written many.
But. Yeah. Well, I think the one that's probably most relevant to what we've been talking about today, which I kind of put as one of my favorite books, just because it's a really straightforward way of understanding it. It is the book So You Think You Can Lead, because it talks about this model of permissive leadership and how we've gotten to it. But more importantly, it introduces the notion of authority, right? So that we can start to embrace our authority as leaders, to feel entitled to exercise authority once and all, right? Because we talk about authorities like this dirty little word in business, that no one's allowed to exercise authority because, you know, that flies in the face of employee empowerment. And it walks you through step by step, that journey of, you know, self-awareness, other awareness, and then looking at how do you lead in a way that corresponds to the stage of performance development that your employees are at. Mm-hmm. So it's a really practical way of saying, you know, some of the language we've used, oh, I need to actually direct them here. I don't need to coach them at this stage. Coaching's inappropriate at the stage that they're at. And so a lot of leaders have moved into this sort of hands-off coaching model, but they're not actually leading and directing the performance of their people early on. That sets up their authority to foster the followership that Anne was talking about. So that's, I mean, we have other books, but I think for leaders who are really looking for practical ways to be more effective in getting their employees to follow So You Think You Can Lead is a great starting point for that.
Hmm. Love that. I'll be checking that one out myself. That sounds fascinating. So as we wrap up, I would love for you to have a chance. If people walk away with one thing from this episode, what do you want them to walk away with?
Well, mine is always the really owning that we as human beings, as leaders, as parents, wherever we are in our life, that we're on a developmental journey and that we never show up at a particular time in our life fully formed. It's the notion that, okay, now you're 21, you're an adult, and so now you behave like an adult according to the big giant book of shoulds, right? And so it's really understanding and allowing ourselves to be wherever we are in our development, owning it, and then as we own it, taking responsibility for our own development. So many leaders out there are complaining that their organization isn't developing them without saying, hey, this is me. This is my career. I own it. I own my own level of competence here. And if at the end of the day, I'm not getting my employees to do things the way they need to be done, and the organization isn't funding development, it is on me. Because it's my development in my career. And I, as Heather said, about I'm entitled to spending developmental dollars on myself, you see? which a lot of people in, you know, particularly in, you know, Canada with our more socialist approach to things. It's everyone expects everyone else, you know, the government and organizations to fund everything, as opposed to my responsibility, my mental health is my responsibility, my leadership development, my responsibility. And also to be able to do, you know, the three no's with your boss. You go to your boss, I need leadership development. No. Okay. I'm going to go back and do it again.
I love that. And I think you're spot on. I think personal responsibility is key. Like, who else is going to be as invested in your own development as you?
Exactly. Yes.
What about you, Heather?
So mine is around this notion of, you know, sort of changing the frame that you're powerless and that there's no way to solve for something, right? And so when you're finding yourself stuck and feeling powerless, what that message there is I don't have the right skills. I don't have the right experience. I don't know the process. And that means I need to go find it. I need help in order to move out of this. And we hear this from clients all the time where they say, well, you know, I can't do that, or I can't say that, or I can't, you know, I can't tell my employees what I expect of them. And I, you know, it's, and they talk as though they are powerless at work, at home, to do anything about their situation. And our message is always, you are powerful. And you're entitled to lead out in your own life. And if you're feeling powerless, then it's looking at the issue from that perspective of, what do I need to help me to solve this? Because every situation that someone feels powerless in, there's always a way, a developmental way out of that. It's just that where you are right now, that's a gap for you, a developmental gap for you, and the answer is out there. So don't just sit there and talk about it and complain about it. Actually go find that answer for you, for yourself.
So good. I know our listeners are going to want to stay connected with the two of you and continue to learn from you. What is the best way for them to do that?
So our website, dranitsaris-hilliard.com, and I'm hoping you'll put that in the show notes for everyone.
And it's because
I know that's a bit of a mouthful from a spelling perspective, but we have everything there in one place for you, information about our books, our podcasts, our programs, the work that we do with our clients, and also an easy way to contact us. So welcome you to hop on over there and check it out, and look forward to having your audience stay in touch.
Love that. And I will have that in the show notes, as well as a link to your book.
Great.
So You Think You Can Lead.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for being on the show and for being so generous. I mean, you have shared so much insight and wisdom today. I've got a page of notes here just from listening the first time. I know our listeners have had so much value added to them. Thank you for that.
Thank you for having us. It's been a pleasure. Lots of fun.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks for joining me for this episode today. As we wrap up, I'd love for you to do two things. First, subscribe to this podcast so you don't miss an episode. And if you find value here, I'd love it if you would rate it and review it. That really does make a difference in helping other people to discover this podcast. Second, if you don't have a copy of my newest book, Catalytic Leadership, I'd love to put a copy in your hands. If you go to catalyticleadershipbook.com, you can get a copy for free. Just pay the shipping so I can get it to you, and we'll get one right out. My goal is to put this into the hands of as many leaders as possible. This book captures principles that I've learned in 20 plus years of coaching leaders in the entrepreneurial space, in business, government, nonprofits, education, and the local church. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn to keep up with what I'm currently learning and thinking about. And if you're ready to take a next step with a coach to help you intentionally grow and thrive as a leader, I'd be honored to help you. Just go to catalyticleadership.net to book a call with me. Stay tuned for our next episode next week. Until then, as always, leaders, choose to be catalytic.
Thanks for listening to Catalytic Leadership with Dr. William Attaway. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss the next episode. Want more? Go to catalyticleadership.net.